SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews, taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
During this time, this is part of the quote discussion period that they can have for the whip deal, whether they bring it up here or wait to the next meeting. But as we know, on Friday, they're doing a little experiment out here where the riders are going to not carry a whip on all races, on all horses. And we'll see what kind of information comes up after the races.
It's going to be interesting. And, of course, yesterday we had the impromptu meet and greet with Kim Sawyer, the CHRB's steward, and that's a good question, and I should know this, but I don't think I do. The steward stand is populated by all CHRB, or are they? Is it a mix, like we have in New York?
It's not a mix here. In California, all three stewards are appointed by the California Horse Racing Board.
Okay.
So in many states, there will be what's called an association steward, and whereby one is hired by the track itself, just because different points of view. But in the end, they do the theoretically they're doing the right thing regardless. But it's been thought about here to try and maybe have an association steward in there. And the only thing is, it's more administrative on a lot of stuff to give the track's perspective on some decisions that are made.
Absolutely.
Whereas here, you know, they're all appointed by the horse racing board, which the horse racing board's appointed by the governor. So it's somewhat political, but not so much when it gets down to our level here at the racetrack. But when decisions are made behind closed doors, and that's where, you know, the track feels, and I know in some states, more comfortable when they have a representative in there, fighting for the track's interests, so to speak. So, three stewards is a norm, and Kim was one of them. And like we talked about, it's nice to see them out here in the morning, you know, talking to the horsemen, getting the feel. And like all jobs that deal, especially in this game, communication is key. You know, if you're not out here pounding the pavement, shaking hands for them, but just understanding what they do and why they might do. She might be down here asking about a horse that, you know, wore blinkers and, you know, didn't react well. They watched a lot of film. And so when you talk to people and you're not just making your decisions on, you know, reading the newspaper, it makes it a lot better.
Board, but now gambling in New York Gambling Commission, and then a Naira steward. So there's one from each, basically the Chinese menu style of
and
of
like
stewarding.
I said, they're all following the same rule book. It's nothing like that. When they're making decisions about taking horses down, that has nothing to do with, you know, who hires them and who pays their paycheck. Believe me, like I said, it's more
on paper. Yes.
No.
Everybody has their own. Agendas have been known to emerge.
I like to think that it
you
doesn't
like to
have
think
any
that's
way,
exactly
that
right.
way.
That's
and
right.
most of the stores that I've come across, from New Jersey to Florida to California, you know, they may make some decisions that I didn't like, but I think their heart is in it. And I tell you, of all the jobs on this side of the track, that's one I don't think I would really want to do. You know, a lot of decisions that affect people's lives. I mean, I'm used to that because I had the same situation in what I did when, you know, handing out stalls and things like that. And these guys do the same thing. And so you got to remember that they're getting together, they're making a decision at that minute, at that time, at that minute, with the information they have. And you make the decision and you move on. And obviously, when money's involved, you're going to have two sides to the story. And hasn't been, I think everything's settled down here a little bit. I mean, some of the heat's been taken off of them, where lots of times they're In other words, you don't want this. Just it's just like a referee in basketball. You don't want to know who they are. If you know who the names are, then they're probably not having a good day.
The speaking of money, a couple of money topics. We've got to talk. Maybe tomorrow we'll reach out to Brad Cummings and get an update on the introduction of his Equilottery that he's worked so hard on for I don't know how many years. You've been hearing about it from the time he conceived it, Brad Cummings, and Win Play Show, which debuted in Kentucky last week, off to a very good start. In fact, exceeding expectations, and it's I'm anxious to hear from Brad about the specifics. I've only seen kind of the headlines and the top lines. They'll knock down a bunch of horses today at Keeneland. The April 2-year-old in training sale has been away for 4 or 5 years, and it's come back, and they got 40 hips to sell today. They had a bit of a wet track for the Breeze Show, so keep an eye on that. We'll do some recapping undoubtedly with Sid tomorrow. There's a story, and in case, you know what, we could head to the break. Jay Pridman's going to join us early this week while it's all fresh in our minds. And we're going to go over the Wood again and the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby with Jay and get his postscript, including the very adventurous, and by the way, my boy Nick Juarez, the new year, speaking of stewarding, the stewards handed down 15 days for Nick for that hijinks on Jovia, and it some I saw some people say that was not enough. Other people say, you know, too much, just fine him, whatever. He's on the ground 15 days for that misadventure that set off a chain reaction, and everybody continues to kind of digest those trips. And certainly Tacitus, out of that, the way he acquitted himself, that's a good experience for a fairly lightly raced 3-year-old to kind of get that jostling and having to persevere, and he did. So Tacitus scored some points, but we'll talk about it with Jay. Jay does those expanded comments, which are invaluable, his recaps. While we're in New York, and before we go to the break, another story I got to get to by probably tomorrow, and I'm going to get Dr. Alday back for horse health. There is a really a silly situation that the New York State Board of Veterinary Medicine issued a ruling or a paper that letter that they filed that is going to make it difficult for non-veterinarians to do certain holistic treatments on horses. And the person that is really at the center of this is the very well-known and highly respected Diane Voles, who has been doing the MagnaWave therapy on horses for years, and some of the top horses. And now, just because it has the word wave in it doesn't mean that it's shockwave. The MagnaWave is a different technology, and it's something that is just good. It promotes cell regeneration. It's not dissimilar from the vibrating pad that you can put horses on. It's no different than any of the non-medication and non-invasive treatments for horses. And we got to get Alan Foreman's already involved, and akin the situation to that of Chris Brown from, I can't believe it's over 10 years ago already, the equine dentist. They were going to make it hard for an equine dentist who historically has never been a medical dentist. Guys that float teeth on the racetrack are craftsmen, tradesmen.
I thought you were going in another direction when you said Chris Brown. You're talking about the rapper.
No.
Now, what the Magna? What's it called?
MagnaWave.
MagnaWave. That has nothing to do with Magna. I did read the article in TDN and learned a little bit myself because I wasn't familiar with the machine. And the fact, now this was already in the works, right?
This is something they issued this a month ago, apparently. And we'll we'll get into it. Dan Ross, who I respect tremendously, went and got quotes from Russell Cohen. I don't know if it was part of whether his line was what he said was part of his new comedy act, but preposterous. Back after this, Jay Pribman.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All the angels on the wire, getting dizzy from the heights. Go carefully, carefully. Oh, that stream driver, she shoots but never misses. Step down, passing traffic. Go carefully, carefully. Oh, that stream driver, I wouldn't turn the finger over a sleeper like you. Go carefully, carefully.
We're back at the races, back at Santa Anita, and Jay Pribman's going to join us. And before Jay joins us, I do want to read a tweet, a statement from Kentucky House Representative Adam Koenig. And good for Adam, who represents the district in and around Northern Kentucky, Covington and Erlanger and basically Turfway Park environs. And in response to the PETA statement, Koenig says, "We need to do the best we can to keep horses safe and sound. However, our decisions will be evidence-based. We will not be held hostage by an extremist organization who would shut down racing if they could." Good for Adam Koenig. And happy to have Jay Pribman join us. Wanted to get Jay in early this week in the shadow of the big three-race weekend. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm good, and Hammer with me as well for another day.
Good morning, Jay.
Oh, very nice.
You switched mics on me.
I switched. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Hammer. How are you?
Fantastic. Well,
Jay, we had everything we could want in terms of the weekend. I don't know if you want to go west to east.
You're driving the bus, my man.
Well, I'll do my best to keep it out of the ditch. And Jay, the action here, we knew it centered around Bob Baffert, and then Instagram trying to position himself maybe for the run to Kentucky, and of course Nolo Contendere. There were four major contenders, and Baffert won two with a slight surprise.
Roadster's obviously been a very highly regarded horse since before he ever ran, and as I wrote last week in my Derby Watch story about the throat surgery that he had, he's obviously come back well from that, had an allowance prep beating Nolo Contesto, and then won the race last week. One of the interesting things I thought about the win was that he came from well off the pace on a day when it was hard to make up a lot of ground, and he got a very patient ride from Mike Smith and made up ground and won the race. I thought Game Winner ran well, but he continues to lug in through the lane and can't quite finish off the race, I think, as well as one would want. He's going to need to improve on that aspect of his game to going forward, to have his best chance. But considering that he was coming back on just 3 weeks' rest, from a ship to Oakland, I thought he ran another strong race. So, per usual, there's a couple of very good horses coming from the West Coast, and oftentimes Baffert is the one who trains them. It was his ninth Santa Anita Derby win, which is a record, beating his previous record of eight. Instagram, my instinct, as I'd said on your show before, was that I just wasn't convinced he was a two-turn horse, and I thought he ran a good race. He really hung in there when he first got challenged in upper stretch, but I just don't think he wants to stay out a mile and an eighth right now. I mean, maybe by the time the Haskell rolls around a few months from now, that would be in his wheelhouse, but he's just not ready for it yet. And it was a good effort, but I think for the time being, a race like the Woody Stevens or something like that, and then move on to either the Haskell and or the Alan Jerkins is probably the kinds of races that are most suitable for him at the moment.
The ride, getting the lion's share of attention, Mike Smith, even surprising Baffert, Jay, with the way he took a position, saved ground, and really let Roadster drop out of it, and he showed really a new dimension in this win, and frankly, considering the racetrack, it feels like that was a particularly strong effort to go out and nail the stablemate down the stretch.
No, very much so. I mean, he got a career best buyer speed figure. I mean, all the buyer figures of the three races last week were all in the same general area, but Roadster's was, in fact, the highest of the three by a point over the second fastest. So it was a strong race. And, for a horse who had all that time off and just the one allowance prep, it was a very good effort by a horse who's been held in high regard for a long, long time.
Well, moving forward, Jay, coming out of California, it does feel like with Omaha Beach my God,
improbable
moving to Arkansas Derby, it does feel like the California contingent will come in hot to Churchill Downs.
No, it sure looks that way. And the two that we just mentioned, plus Galilean, is going from California back for the Arkansas Derby as well to take on the likes of Long Range Toddy. So that'll be a very good race on Saturday.
Now, think about this: you're reviewing the three winners, Tacitus, Vekoma, and Roadster. Guess what? I don't think we've ever seen this before. Those three huge preps, four starts each, heading into the Derby. It's pretty wild when you think about it.
It's the nature of the game these days.
Yeah,
it's not exactly. And that was basically the point. Is as long as you were talking with Bob here yesterday about he's waiting until the 24-second clock is winding down with a couple of his horses lately. Did that last year with Justify. He doesn't win here. he's out, and he did the same thing with Roadster yesterday, but he obviously knows what he has, and he's doing that. But when these horses race less and less and less, and as more spots are being given away, you have the Japan spot this year. I don't know. Is there an England spot for Europe as well?
We'll know more Thursday.
At the moment, no, but yeah, to be determined. But there's definitely, as you pointed out, the Japanese spot is already, so there's one carve-out taken.
So that's one less chance for horses here. And as we talked, you know, the races are still out there to run in. And if you chose not to, that's your prerogative. But when Derby Day hits, if you're not in, you got nobody to blame but yourself.
Yeah, everybody knows sort of the layout, what the schedule is of races going back to September and what the rules are. So, you know, I've seen some people complaining that, there's going to be the Florida Derby runner-ups and maiden, and should a maiden be in the Kentucky Derby over the other horses? And look, he got in there on merit. He finished second and got 40 points in the Florida Derby, and so he's in.
Jay, before we move to the bluegrass and the wood, we'll stay on the West Coast for just a second because another twist of fate, Sueno, a couple of other, you know, the kind of the desperate for point group is going to mix it up in the Lexington, from what we can tell.
Well, with another twist of fate, I mean, they definitely wanted to go straight to the Kentucky Derby, but you know, to Hammer's point just now, I mean, if you don't have enough points, you only have yourself to blame. So they realized that they could be on the outside looking in, and that's why he's going to run. He currently has 30 points. You know, if he'd have won the Sunland Derby, he'd have been in. But because he was a narrowly beaten second, he's right now doesn't quite have enough, and so he's going to have to he's going to have to run to have a chance to get into the top 20. So that's the reason that he's being wheeled back for the Lexington.
Sueno also involved, and he's, what's he got coming in? He's off the bottom of my page numerically. Here it is.
Sueno has 28.
28. So, well, 36
now,
would be.
Didn't he do this last year?
DeSormo?
Keith DeSormo,
yes.
I mean?
Yes.
So that's 20 points. Is that correct, Jay?
28-4-2.
28-4-2.
Yeah.
So the eight could push either one of those horses over the limit.
Right at they would need horses maybe to, you know, depending on what happens in Arkansas.
Right.
We'll see from there. Jay, talk about Vekoma and win and Signal Man and the way you viewed the bluegrass.
So, you know, I liked Vekoma's race. I liked how he attended the pace and then moved on. I mean, he's obviously got very funky action. He looked like he was cross-firing an upper stretch with his hind legs moving in a different sort of lead change, per se, than his front legs. I think that's why he looked really awkward, but he definitely paddles pretty badly, too. It doesn't stop him from running pretty fast. His race in the Fountain of Youth wasn't bad at all for a three-year-old debut, and then he moved forward off of that. I thought Win ran a good race. He ran into some traffic trouble on the far turn, and he could have chucked it right there and maybe finished fourth, but he re-engaged and came on well to finish second, and in fact, that might have been a very pivotal nose with him beating Signal Man, because, you know, Signal Man is at 38 right now, and there's the likely potential for horses to leapfrog him this weekend. I mean, at the moment, he's in the top 20, but he's probably going to be out of the top 20 after this weekend and might need some help in terms of horses above him defecting. And that's all going to be because of that photo with Win being in the race now and Signal Man in a more precarious position. And if you watch the replay, it's a desperate nose. I mean, he barely gets up and beats him. But I thought Win ran a good race. He's a horse that, going into his two-turn debut a couple starts ago, I was skeptical as to just how good he was going to be going around two turns, but he's run two good races, and I like the way he persevered on Saturday despite running into trouble on a track where for most of the day it looked like he needed to be fairly close.
Agreed. And it's interesting because that's been a recurring, kind of a recurring theme. And when we get to Churchill, we're going to be talking about the pace scenario and how many horses are seemingly going to be up against it a little bit. And Heichel, for instance, we'll get to that with the Wood. Anything else out of this group? We talked to George Weaver yesterday, Jay, and he's excited. And of course, Randy Hill, he had a long time involved in the game, and Matt Gatsis, Sovereign Stable, and all. Also, the Gatsis family had Gander, absolute favorite on the East Coast. Some nice people that are going to be involved in the Derby. And Randy Hill, of course, part of the ownership group on Tax. Danny Gargan, right. beautifully managed Tax to get to the Derby. And then Tacitus followed up his Tampa Bay Derby with a terrific effort in the Wood.
Right. I mean, I really like the way Tacitus won the race because he did encounter some trouble going into the first turn. We all seen the replay of the Wood a number of times. It was obviously a very roughly run race, especially the first furlong of the race. And he had some trouble going into the first turn there, bumping off of horses and just having to avoid clipping heels and whatnot. And the thing that I liked about him most is how he reacted to that because he's by Tappet and sometimes they get a little flooded. And he settled into a good spot and then finished off the race well. And I liked how he overcame some of that early trouble, put himself in a good position, and then finished off the race. I thought Tax had a really good trip. He fell into a good spot. He was third behind two dueling leaders that were setting a really brisk pace. And he ran well, but he was second best to Tacitus, who I thought had slightly more to overcome. And still won the race. And as for Heichel, he was well out of it early, but I didn't think he really had any trouble early on. He just fell back because he comes from well off of it. It was a hot pace in front of him, and he ran out nicely to be third. But he was still beaten four lengths by Tacitus, so it's just hard for me to see him making up that and beating him in 4 weeks, along with some of the horses that are going to be coming from different locales like Florida and Arkansas and California and Kentucky. So I like Tacitus for the Derby in terms of him being a potential win candidate. I'm less so on the other two out of that race who will go on, but the top three go on.
Exactly, and we may get into a position here with Jose Ortiz where he may end up having to have a tough decision to make. I'm bleary eyed here.
Jimmy Riccio.
Jimmy Riccio. In terms of where he might end up, mount wise.
Right, because he's riding Improbable in the Arkansas Derby, and he's already been on. He's already won a major Derby prep on Tacitus in the Wood. You know, Mike Smith's going to have a similar situation, potentially, having ridden Roadster, and now he's on Omaha Beach this week. So both those guys have the potential to have difficult but worthwhile choices to make. And what's going to happen is that there's going to be a couple of riders who flop into some really top mounts with whoever they abandon.
Exactly.
And you know, Jay, it's funny. It seems not every year we get into this circumstance, but some years we do, and it's fun to see how sometimes it just happens. But so you could take two avenues this way as far as a rider and an agent. You can declare early and say, I'm going with course A, or you can sit back and hope for a year like this one and knowing that you're not committed, and then, boy, all of a sudden, guess what? Roadster just came open. Or, you know, Tacitus could possibly come open, and you can sit there and, you know, cherry pick at the end. So it is interesting to see how some of the riders and the agents, you know, when they choose to declare their mounts.
But, and as you know, sometimes it's just because of circumstances and that you might have had a horse that you thought was going to take you there and the horse just didn't pan out. So now you're just sort of casting about hoping something flops into your lap.
Right. I mean, obviously, the ideal thing is have a horse in December that you know is going to go on, and you've latched up and you're in and let's go. But as you said, things happen, and then you have an option there again: do I latch onto somebody else, or I just kind of play the field? And so there's going to be a few very nice mounts here.
Horses
that are going to be under 10-1 in the Derby. You know, you mentioned Tassis. I'm with you, Jay, for a horse that's in his fourth start to overcome all that trouble early and to get them to settle down. There was even a little bump and match a little bit later on in the stretch as I watched the head-on for the first time again. Very impressive. And to move on again, looks like the distance is absolutely no problem. And, you know, Bob was here yesterday and said Roadster really got schooled. I'll tell you what, Tacitus went to school as well and came out on top. So he's impressed me.
Jay, we also, along these lines, some of the news, Grey Magician going forward. There had been, you know, some speculation that he wouldn't necessarily be Derby bound, but for now, seems to be in that direction. And the field, a little bit in flux when we look at the Arkansas Derby. A couple of horses that are sort of expected, but I saw the note from Jennifer Hoyt about Roland and Country House. I thought Country House was pretty much committed to running.
He is. I mean, he's Country House is running. Yeah.
Yeah. And Asmussen, beside Long Range Toddy, he's got that other trio that he may move forward with. And other than that, who else? I guess that's pretty much everybody. So we've got our scenarios, play-ins, as it were, into Derby. Jay, a couple of notes about the weekend here as well. You wrote about the surface, and I wanted you to expand those comments for those that might not have seen the piece in DRF.
Well, I just did a news story yesterday. I thought, you know, coming out of a very successful week of racing at Santa Anita and weekend under an atmosphere that was very precarious. It was a great day of racing on Saturday, and then Sunday had good racing as well. And so I just decided, you know, I'm really curious what the safety record's been like at Santa Anita since the new protocols were put in, since the rain stopped, and, you know, since Dennis Moore came back as a consultant, just, you know, many different factors that have gone on. But by and large, as you know, racing was suspended for a second time after a maiden claimer named Princess Lily B suffered a catastrophic injury on March 14th. So I looked at, okay, what's gone on since then? Because that was the day that Belinda Stronach put out her open letter, and there have been decisions made off of that that have been put in place, some that are still proposed. But to me, it was just like, okay, let's just stop right here and take a look at what's gone on since then. And I looked at training days since the next day, March 15th through Sunday, because I was writing the story yesterday morning, and I found that there were 24 days of training, and there were 3,138 workouts that were recorded, and there have been no catastrophic injuries in training, knock on wood, through now yesterday morning, but those numbers didn't include that at the time, because when I had my deadline that I wanted to send the story in. And then also, as you know, racing didn't resume until March 29th. There was a 3.5-week suspension, and 13 cards were abandoned. But since racing resumed, there have been 7 race days. There were 524 runners who competed, and unfortunately there was a fatality with arms runner in that downhill turf race in the San Simeon. But I think if you look at the overall totality of that training span and racing span, the safety record has been extremely good. And I think we know what some of the factors are as to why that's happened, but I thought it was worth pointing out that, you know, there was a terrible spike a couple of months ago when there was bad weather and sealed tracks and quite a bit more racing than maybe there should have been, which I think management has now said they would look at having, treating it as like a snow day. And not racing in those kinds of situations, but But all the things that have been going on in the last 3.5 weeks have resulted in a good safety record. And I thought it was worth, considering they've rightly taken their lumps for what went on earlier in the meet, I thought it was fair to point out what has gone on recently.
Absolutely, and a valuable, you know, a valuable exercise, and you know, it's momentum, I suppose, but you know, you got to just stay on high alert. Everybody has to maintain their role and be vigilant. And other than that, what else can we do, Jay?
No, I mean, you can do everything perfectly, and still things can happen.
That's right,
but. You know, and you can do things maybe perfectly and a bunch of bad things happen. Or you can do things terribly and things don't happen because you just get extremely lucky. But I just wanted to deal with facts. And those are the facts of what has happened over the last 3.5 weeks in terms of training and over the 7 days of racing since racing resumed towards the end of March.
And Jay, people need to see those numbers too. They need to see that things have gotten better here. And if you heard at the beginning, coming out here for 6-7 days in a row, today, for some reason, people have a little bit of a bounce in their step. They're smiling. They're telling stories, but they're laughing at the ends of them, where this wasn't that way over the weekend. And so, you know, they need to see that things have improved. And if you do the right thing and at least you set yourself up for things to go right, they're going to go right, and no matter what you do, of course, you're going to have a hiccup. But you just have to set them up so it does right. So I'm glad you put the numbers out that you did, and I enjoy particularly, even though I watch all the races, your kind of quick reviews, especially of the 3-year-old races, which from your perspective, and I know the rest of the racing world does too. But I just want to let you know that the mode out here. Even Billy Koch just walked up here with a smile on his face. So, but it just seems, for some reason, between yesterday and today, people are smiling a little bit. The chins aren't down, and maybe they all bet Virginia last night. I don't know, but it's better.
And the over. You have to have the over.
Yes.
After all the under talk, it ended up well over. Easily over. Well, Jay, appreciate it, and appreciate the chance to get the Derby watch in early this week while the results are fresh. And I guess the final piece, the big cap. You've seen a lot of them, and I'm curious how that one stacks up for you.
Well, in terms of, you know, stretch run excitement, it would be right up there. I mean, it was a terrific race. I mean, I don't know that it was Perot and John Henry, but it was at least there wasn't an inquiry into disqualification after it was over either. So it was a very exciting race. It was just nice to see the race come off after having it be postponed for 4 weeks. At least the big two were still around for it, McKenzie and Giftbox, and they put on a real show. And it was, you know, I think they're both top class horses, and I thought Giftbox, he had really been touting himself in the way he had trained since the San Antonio, and you know, he like McKenzie, had been ready for a month for that race. They just had to continue to train along, and fortunately the race was rescheduled for part of the blockbuster card on Saturday along with the Oaks and the Derby, and it just was a great race to watch. And I think I said afterwards on Twitter, I said, you know, that's why those of us who love the game, is watching two horses like Giftbox and McKenzie battle it out like that, you know, putting their best effort forward in a race of that caliber. It was really fun to watch.
Well, the love of racing and your I won't say preference, but your allegiance to this venue and to racing in California, much appreciated and widely hailed over the weekend, Jay. So well done.
Well, thank you, and it was just a great weekend of racing. It was really fun, and hopefully, you know, upward and onward.
Absolutely. Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman. The Derby Watch will drop, today's Tuesday, so tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
The new Derby watch with probably a couple of we'll just hint at it, a couple of changes in the Derby watch pecking order, and the always fun comments between Mike Watchmaker and Jay Pribman as they duel toward Derby. Jay, thanks.
Thanks, guys, very much. Enjoy your trip to Arkansas.
I will, you know it, and leave later today, although they canceled the flight. So after talking with Johnny D yesterday, Hammer, the potential to stay here, it did raise its head for about 30 minutes until I got Southwest. They found me a route through St. Louis. So we're going to kind of do the Ozark two-step to the Ouachita Mountains at Hot Springs. Happy, you mentioned Billy Koch, and he was giving me the business. He was down there giving me the business about not calling him last week after the Grade 1 win for their filly. And always a pleasure when we can congratulate Billy Koch on any success. And I also saw you win a race in New York too. I slapped on Aqueduct. Was that Saturday or Sunday?
It was Friday.
Friday. There,
yes,
you go.
It was Friday. Thank you, Steve. It's about time.
Oh boy, here we go.
well,
unbelievable.
We thought we saw you on TV in New York, so that's why we didn't get you on.
We were supposed to go. My good friend Travis Cromwell, who's one of our owners, we bought tickets to go Thursday night Red Eye to New York, but then we looked at the weather. And it was supposed to pour on Friday, and we had a chance of scratching, so we were like, do we go, do we not go? So we ended up not going. Of course he wins, Charlie McCoy for Michelle Nevin, who, by the way, is the best.
She does great.
Do you know
she's
Michelle?
Terrific.
You guys
of course,
know her well? Like, she's just...
She's terrific.
I couldn't love anybody more. She's awesome, and it was a great win, but we were here all weekend. Saturday was really fun out here. You guys were here.
Of course.
I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like... It reminded me of what it should be out here, and I think with all the everything that's happened, we needed a day like that. And I think that's what I walked up when you guys were talking, and you kind of take this deep breath now, like, okay, are we past it? And there is no getting past it. We still continue to evolve and continue to change, and continue to get better and continue to work together. I think that's the big thing that I keep harping on is this idea of uniformity. And I don't know why that gets lost in translation sometimes, but if they're going to make changes here in California, they got to make changes everywhere. And because whether it's Kentucky or New York or Florida, you're next. So that's what I keep saying. I keep wanting people to, kind of get their heads out of the sand and realize that we all need to work together if we're going to continue this great sport.
Well, and wanted to have the overwrap conversation with you as well. Last week, Hammer and I, at one point, where were we? When there was one point where you and I were talking about who can we reach out to for kind of a spokes role, a spokesman role, and you obviously came up, and then the win with Spicy,
yeah.
Secret Spice, which is a great story.
It's a good story.
We'll talk about too, but I did want to get your input, and this is one of those scenarios that evolves and is shape shifting minute to minute, so your reaction to it changes. But I mean, you have to have grave concerns as recently as Friday.
There were a lot of sleepless nights. You worry about the game. It's universal. And when it's your life's passion, like everybody sitting at this table right now, then you start looking introspectively at yourself too, and what can you do? And there was to be honest with you, there was a feeling of helplessness. Just felt that I wasn't sure what to do, and I was reaching out to people like Wayne Hughes, people who I respected within the industry that said, keep fighting. Keep speaking out, keep trying to bring people together, and get angry. And that's, and I think you run the gamut of emotions during something like this, where at the beginning you're scared, then you don't know what's going on, then you're helpless, then you want to fight. And I think a lot of people in the last couple of weeks have gotten that, it's time to fight back. And I think Santa Anita's done a great job with, it's the track or what is it? All these question marks. The track is fine. You think? I mean, the track is it's we had a great weekend. It's safe. And, you know, the unfortunate part of this game is that these things are going to happen no matter what we do. And we just have to be better at handling it and perception, all the obvious things. And we have to get in front of these things. We have to be better with our PR and better with our marketing. And we've been saying this for years. This is not new. It's now this maelstrom that has hit. And I think it's making people wake up. So hopefully we move forward in a positive way.
How many conversations did you have with partners of Little Red Feather?
It was exhausting. But our partners are really great. And yeah, it's nice. My business partner, Gary Fenton, is on the board of the TOC. So we get a lot of information that we can, you know, that he can share. We really try to go out and provide information to our partners almost too much so that there's really no questions for them to ask because we're trying to stay ahead of it with them. But it was tough. We didn't run a race for a month, you know, and that's the only way they can earn, and that's why they're in this game, is to run, not to sit here and breeze.
Well, Billy, I think you had the right idea with your group. You got in front of your group.
Yep.
You told your group what was going on out here. Don't worry about what you read in the papers.
Right.
Don't worry about stories.
Exactly.
And you informed them of what was really actually happening, and
yeah,
they didn't panic. I felt, and that comes down to communication, the C word that we've been using here for about a month.
Sure.
You felt that wasn't generally the case with the general ownership population, trainer population, and fans in general. The message was I don't think conveyed as well as maybe you did with your group globally.
I would 100% agree. I think that, you know, when people ask me what was going on, I the first thing I'd say is, hey, have you checked the weather in February? What happened to us out here? This was historic, absolutely historic. The cold, the wet, and then there's other factors, obviously. But I think what we need to do is stop pointing fingers. This person's to blame. This group is to blame. These guys are to blame. It's time to move forward and not go backwards and say, well, they did this and they didn't, you know, the blah, 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 the horsemen did this, or Santa Anita did this, or what. Okay, that's done. It's in the past. What are we going to do when it happens again? Let's move forward.
We've mentioned that as well. That's the beautiful thing about that. Bring up Jack Reacher again. My man, forget what happened.
Yeah.
Move ahead.
Yeah.
But after you fix the problem, you do need to go back and find out what happened.
Correct.
And maybe there's steps back there to stop
it.
I'm not saying don't forget the past. No.
Right.
You can't whine about it.
Right.
The finger pointing
right.
is out.
That's what I'm saying.
We agree with that. But then there's reason. You got to go back and say, hey, if this happens again, we need to react a little bit differently, and how are we going to do that? And I'm hoping that's going on here now. I'm not working here anymore,
sure,
but I feel like I do because I got a lot of comments
and
a lot of calls from people, like you said. They just want some comfort.
Right.
What's going on? Well, you know, have you heard anything?
I think that's what it's the uncertainty.
Yes.
And that just kills you, and it eats you up inside because you're doing something that you love. You love these horses. I mean, I'm back at the barn. I'm bringing kids out every day. I'm bringing people out, and they're petting on the horses and giving them carrots, and we're watching them breeze, and we're doing all the right things. And you know, I mean, anybody out there who thinks that we as owners or horsemen that don't absolutely love our animals are it's asinine. I hate that. I just hate that. That bothers me.
What always happens, and it's not confined to our industry and to this game, but the willingness or the eagerness for opponents on any topic or in any arena to paint this broad brush and to talk in these generalities about the drugging of horses and
right.
the abuse
right.
and the pushing and trying to create this atmosphere to influence people who may never have thought about it, who don't have a clue, That to me is just—it's reprehensible, and frankly, it's permeating American society
Correct.
In general,
not just
American.
That's what I was going to say.
And that that there's a tone being set for that kind of behavior, and it's we could see it right in front of us coming from external, and it's also frankly internal, quite largely. So take the inferences anywhere you want, folks.
There you go.
But that's what's frustrating. And I'll give you an example. I had to do a load of laundry yesterday.
Sure.
And I go from all the times I've stayed in Alhambra, I go to the laundromat in Alhambra, and I ran into a very nice guy. And after years of taking home the, they got the card.
Sure.
You put the money
you
on the card.
You got it free?
And, no.
Oh,
I
thought you maybe like a yogurt.
Every year. No. No. Bed Bath and Beyond.
Right.
Bed Bath and Beyond coupon.
Stamps.
I offered it to a guy because I end up taking them home year after year, and I've got like three of them at home. There must be about $12 or $14 worth of $3, $4 on each card. So I said, why don't you take this? I said, I I'm not going to use it. Oh, thanks so much. So then we start talking, and he said, I'm here, and I always come here. I use the dry cleaner on Huntington and blah, blah, blah. So he says, why you come out here? Why? I said, at the racetrack. I said, I do a radio show on Sirius XM. Why are those horses dying?
Yeah, yeah.
Go to explain it.
Yeah.
And this was the best. He said, so it's not the Lasix and the whip? The guy says
really?
The guy says that.
Really?
It's not the Lasix
that's amazing.
No, it's not. And so Bob Baffert sat here, 22 hours ago and said, laughingly, right. it's not the Lasix and the whip. That message has gone out there,
right?
And it's just the jockey club has been painting the American horsemen as villains
right.
for 10 years,
right?
And it's they're as responsible for that atmosphere as anybody
they have
is.
To be. Speaking of whips, are we really running without whips on Friday? Yeah,
isn't it exciting?
It's
going to be adventure. It's going to be great.
But I heard this thing about like the insurance thing. Did you hear this thing I don't want to go on and say something that's
not
true.
No, I'm curious.
I think there has to be some. I don't remember. One of the trainers said it to me the other day. That are they going to be? Who's going to insure them without having the safety of the whip? I guess maybe it comes from the trainer's original policy, and now
it's
maybe
not the trainer's.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It's the racetrack has a certain umbrella policy. Usually, it's up to $1 million in coverage, and then they've got their jockey guild coverage.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So don't quote me on anything.
No, that's
I thought
a question.
There was something interesting of because there's no whip that I don't know. That's but they decided this. I don't know. I can't decide if I'm really for this. To be honest with you, I think it's.
Look, I think.
I don't think the gamblers are going to like it.
Well, I think here's the deal. At the last commission meeting, 3 weeks ago, they came down with this edict, and they have that 45-day period. I think the jockeys and the Jockeys Guild are taking advantage of this talking period to go out and say, hey,
okay,
let's get some data. Let's do a real-life test. And, I mean, it's not they're not going to try, and they're not going to do whatever they're going to do, but when the day's over, I'm sure they're going to get in a room, and I'm sure they're going to talk amongst each other, and how'd you feel?
Yeah, and see the handle. And see, I think that's part of it too.
Look at the handle as well, but I think more importantly,
you're talking about just the jocks.
And I talk to the riders. They got how safe did you feel out there when you went between horses or horse came on your outside? Did you feel you had enough control?
Right.
So I think they're doing I think they're taking a progressive action of saying, hey, we need to get some information. We can't guess what it's going to be like in a race without a whip until we do it. So they declared on Friday we're going to try it.
Try it.
And
I got a horse in. I got no idea.
It'll be interesting to see. How the races are run, if they're run differently.
Yeah.
If it's a parade, boat ride out there, and it's harder to pass. Who knows? Getting horses out of the gate, sometimes
either.
They need a few little taps to encourage them. So I think they've taken it right back and said, hey, you want to do this? We're going to find out if it's feasible.
Yeah. I don't know how safe it is. I have no idea. I'm not a jockey. I've never been out there. I'd like for us to even say safe, unsafe.
It's not up to us.
It's right. It's as I tell people all the time. People always especially after races, and they always go, "What happened?" or "That was a terrible ride." I'm like, "Have you ever been a jockey? You ever ridden one of these?" And I always say, like, "You don't know what's going on. They got to make split second decisions on these massive animals going fast. They risk their lives every day. I'm not, you know, listen."
So they're the ones that need to determine
absolutely.
If it's safe or not, I think. So
absolutely. But so, why not? Yeah, I'm kind of in the boat of let them do it. Let's see what happens. And I like your concept of just let's gather the data. I worry about the players. I worry about the owners. I worry about a guy. I worry about getting beat by a nose, and you know what's that going to feel like when my horse didn't have any.
Well, that's
help,
the deal.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know though.
Well, think about if they didn't try this and coming down the stretch in a $1 million race,
yeah.
and they interview the rider, it gets beat ahead, and get interview the rider. Well, I probably could have won with a whip. We don't want that scenario.
No, we don't
at all.
No.
For the owner, and you know, more importantly.
Well, and that goes back to perception. It goes back to what we've been talking about, and that's the general perception of horse racing is that we're beating on these horses.
Yeah.
And I thought the Ramon Dominguez whip this weekend at Keeneland was interesting. I think people are doing things. I think change is imminent, and I think people we're trying to find out where we need to go. But that perception issue, I get it. I mean, if you don't get that, you're not watching. It's just obviously different when you're out here in California in these, you know, a little more liberal place to live.
Now, this one transcends that portion of the environment of the discussion.
Yeah.
It's an area, and I had never really given it a lot of thought, but the Jay Hovde piece involving Trevor Denman, who's a Peter member, and he's been banging this drum for 30 years. In fact, I talked to Johnny D yesterday, was driving, and Johnny remembers. He said, "I remember one day Trevor 30 years ago,
right,
buttonholing me and haranguing me about the whip. We've got to get away from it and so forth." You talk about the rider who might get off and say, if I could have done some urging, it might have been, I might have gotten there. You might also very much get a guy that jumps off and says, this horse really responded well to, to the hand ride,
for sure.
So the vigorous hand ride. This is an individual horse. Listen, there's lazy horses. I said to Rick yesterday.
I'm in trouble.
You could you could write races specifically for horses known to be lazy.
Yes, lazy horses. I got plenty of those.
Because we talked, they're doing it now in the mornings, right, Billy? They're carrying whips, but they're not using it. So they're trying. We're trying to get to a point that's culpable for both sides, but is safe for both horse and rider,
and that's
what matters. And you mentioned a group that is about as important as any, and the bettors.
Yeah,
they need to have confidence that I bet $100 this horse to win it. He's going to get his full effort and everything possible to get your horse to have the placing that he deserves.
The
bettors will abandon.
I don't like when the players don't have a place and a seat at the table. I really don't, because they're an integral part of our society. And I think the stigma of the gambler has also changed. And, you're talking about sports betting. It's rampant in our society right now. And I think for a long time, maybe the gambler was seen as it wasn't the greatest profession. I bet on horses. But now it's semi-normal. And I think that people need to listen to these guys too, because
of course.
I mean, when I have someone that comes to the track for the first time and I'm trying to explain how purses are generated or how they decide how much each, and I'm talking about conditions and I'm talking about purses, you have to bring up the player. The players don't play. We don't run for any purse money.
Right.
So I don't like when they are kind of quote unquote put down, and I think they're important, and I think we need to listen, and hopefully they're on board for change as well.
Let's take the advantage, Billy. I'm going to talk about the win the other day.
Sure.
And grade one. You got to be delighted, and this is it's a fun story about this filly.
Philly, we've always known she was talented. Tom McCrocklin, who does so much work for us, who's our executive bloodstock agent, now does all our pin hooking stuff. So he picked her out at Timonium, and we always knew she was talented. If you look at her PPs, she broke her maiden, I think, I don't have it in front of me, in her second or third start here at Santa Anita, and she was And then she was running against Dream Tree and Midnight Bisou, and you know, she ran third in the stake. And then she had a couple of issues that we had to give her time. And Richie Baltus, who's her trainer, is, you guys know Richie. I mean, he's one of the best in the business. He understands horses, I think, and he's very patient. And I think if you let him work with your horse and you let him kind of do what he needs to do, he can get the most out of a horse. And she comes here last year and runs that 106 buyer in an allowance race, and we were like, whoa, okay, here we go. And but she came out of the race, and we were trying to make the La Brea, and she had this cellulitis in her hock. And it's this, if you talk to any horseman, they're like, oh my God, that's the worst. It takes forever. You know, it's not anything. It's not career. It didn't put her career in jeopardy. But it just was like this time to let it go away and heal. And we were just patient and patient and patient. And then she comes back in this allowance race here at Two Other Than, and she looms up like she's going to win for fun again. And she just flattens out late. She got tired because we missed a lot of training.
Sure.
But the cool thing is when you try to explain to people, hey, she was a little short that day, and no one wants to listen. All they see is she ran 106 by her, and then she comes back and can't win a 2 Other Than, right? And you're like, I promise you she was short. I know she's better than that. But a lot of times, you know what happens? They're right and you're wrong, right? So you go into the grade one, and you're kind of telling everybody, like, I think this filly's doing really good. And you look at the workout reports, and it's like B+, A-, and you're like, okay, well, I mean, and then you look down the field, and you see, you know, Marley's Freedom, who's awesome, but she's never gone two turns. And then you look at Selcourt, and you're like, she's never gone two turns. And then you look at Paradise Woods, and you're like, this is not really the Paradise
Woods.
These
are all
right, that you had before. And obviously, when you look at this in hindsight, you're like, huh, how the hell were we 11-1? And I know we made a lot of players happy that day. And, you know, our partners are the greatest in that they just – they allow us to be patient. They don't put this pressure. When are we running? Where are we running? Why aren't we running? And again, it goes to the C word that you're using before. It's communication. It's letting them know, hey, here's what we're dealing with. Here's what we're doing. If we can get 10 days of jogging in and 10 days of galloping, we're able to breeze. So give me a chance. You know, give us 20 days to see where we're at. You know, it's those kind of things and those kind of messages and the respect that they have for us, we have for them, and that they have, and we have for Richie Baltus and the trust. So it was a really, really great one. You guys know how important grade ones are, just for residual value. And this filly is from the, she's by Discreet Cat, and she's from the female family of Wonder Godot. So this is a really, really well-bred filly that has a chance to do more.
Well, on that note, so this Beholder Mile, which we started about 4 years ago, I think. We shortened up the one race, and just because it's the only grade one mile race for fillies and mares.
This was not the Santa Margarita.
Santa Margarita was longer.
The Santa Margarita is still around, but it's a grade two now. But it was a mile and an eighth.
Yes.
The Kenyatta, not the Kenyatta. What this was for?
The van. This is for fillies and mares.
Yeah.
The mile on the dirt.
But what was it?
Was it the? It wasn't the Vanity.
No, the Vanity became Hollywood Park.
The Vanity's become.
I don't know.
That was it. This was
the Vanity.
This was Vanity, and they moved it up.
We made it a great. We made it because it was just another blah blah mile and eighth race that's going to get five, and decided to change it. You're allowed to change a race within an eighth of a mile without going through the committee. So looked around and said, hey, you know what? There's no miles out there. Grade one. Let's give it a shot. But we had a tough place figuring out where to put it. Mm-hmm. So it's been later. It's been later. It's been later. Moved it up earlier in the schedule just to kind of to maybe
attract
make the decision earlier in the year for those guys that maybe I can go a mile, or the ones maybe I can't go a mile and an eighth. So now I'm curious where you're going to go next, because that was the deal. Let's put it here. You get an option to go in the 7/8 race, or you could have gone in the Apple Blossom. And
yeah, so Apple Blossom was too quick. There's a chance we go in the La Troenne. The Friday of Kentucky Derby week, which is grade one. You know, one,
and you have the 7/8 races.
No, it's the next day is the 7/8 race. There's two.
The Humana.
There's one that's the Humana Dispatch is 7/8,
which always comes up top.
Right, and then there's I think the La Troenne is a mile and a 16th.
Right, right.
Yeah. So
the names, there was the whole.
I don't know. I think what happens now, and I'm sure you guys have had people, and you know this better, but once you've won the grade one, Your whole goal now is to just add to her resume. So it's almost like, you know, you look at a race like the Santa Margarita that's coming up here, that's a mile and an eighth, and she could run in that. But it's like, do you want to run in that, or do you want to go to Kentucky and face whoever there in front of Kentucky people, in front of the world, and kind of put her on that center stage? So that you really have to weigh stay home over a track she loves, probably easier race, but it's a grade two. Do you go to the grade one, or do you give her time? And right now, to be honest with you, she hasn't breezed. She's been galloping. We're going to take our time, really map out a schedule. And what you kind of do, you look at the Breeders' Cup and you kind of back yourself up. So you got great races here. You got the Zenyatta here. You got the Clement Hirsch this summer at Del Mar. Those are both grade one winning your ends. And you look at those kind of races and you say to yourself, okay, how do I get there? And how do I get there with a fresh horse towards the end of the year to really make an impact on that division? Yep. Make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is what, you know, an insight into how operations, you know, how a
Yeah, and by the way, it never works out that way.
Sometimes it's just...
You're going to miss a race here. Yeah. Something's going to happen. You don't want to go here. Yeah. I mean, it never really works out. That's what was so great about winning that race. Because what it does is it takes that pressure off. You got the grade one. They can't take it away. When she goes to sell ultimately at a sale, which is what's going to happen, they don't say what I said. They don't say, oh, Marley's Freedom can't go two turns and Paradise Creek wasn't the same. They just say she's a grade one winner.
Yeah. Period. And going back to that, so we're talking about an older filly.
This was the vanity.
This was the vanity. That's what I thought. So you're talking about older filly. You're talking about your plans all the way through the rest of the year.
Sure.
So let's regress back to when Bob was here yesterday talking about the three-year-olds on the way to the Kentucky Derby. You can't have one stumble.
No, not
like
one.
Like he says, everything, you make a plan.
Yeah.
And guess what? That plan better work or you are not going to make the Derby.
Absolutely.
And it's just amazing the pressure that these guys put themselves under, like we were talking about yesterday, with the 24-second clock going down and having to make that shot with getting the points to get in. Ease of you now, you said, we got to grade one. So we can, not necessarily cherry pick, but you can do what you want to do now.
Correct.
Because on that page, it's still going to have that
grade one.
Nice dark print that says grade one.
I give those guys credit for, you know, I've really, unfortunately, never been on the Derby trail like that, where they're just every day is, you know, you can, like you said, you can't have a hiccup, you can't miss a day. I mean, the way that Baffert has done this year after year after year, and granted he has probably the best horses and some of the best owners, but it's still, it is hard. I don't think people realize just how hard it is. And you see a horse like Roadster, what he was able to do, missing a lot of last year and earlier this year to come and make that run the other day. I thought that was brilliant. I haven't looked at the numbers or done any research, you know, my Derby homework, but visually, I thought it was brilliant the way he came up and got game winner. So it's a fun time right now. I do my podcast later today and we're going to talk Derby and it's a good time for horse racing. I hope that we continue to have safe races out here and we can get the eye towards Churchill Downs on that big day because we need it.
Well, on a regular basis, ever since the emergence of Little Red Feather with Singletary, a steady parade, one of our favorites, Egg Drop, and the White Witch, and so many fun horses. What's the plan? Some two-year-old, you mentioned Timonium.
Yeah.
We still have got, we've got OBS April. We've got Keeneland today. Yes. So obviously you're not
involved. I'm not there. I got some people there looking. We're going to be strong at OBS April. It's a really great sale for people to go out, because there's so many horses
there. Big box store.
Yeah, and you can if you do your homework, you really can try to find a diamond in the rough. We bought one at OBS March that's already here. We've never done this before. With Game of Thrones starting on Sunday. Are you guys Thrones fans? Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
Haven't cracked that egg yet.
Well, we named him Rhaegar after Rhaegar Targaryen. He's a you know, just have, we like to have fun. Yeah. And with Thrones, I mean, you know, but he's a Golden Sense, and he's here with Phil D'Amato, and he's breezed already. It's incredible. I've never had a two-year-old go through the sale, and we've just looked at the horse and said, okay, bring him out. Like, it's just never happened before. Normally, we're like, let's give him 60 days. Let's say he's got shins, he's got this. Let's just, he's here. And it's really exciting, and our people are really excited. I can't even remember the last time I ran in a 2-year-old race at Santa Anita. Like, it's not on my radar. So this is a whole new phenomenon for me, and it's really cool.
It's fun. Great, yeah, it's fun to have
2-year-olds are just hope. It's that hope. It's incredible feeling.
That's
Rick,
great.
Why are you smiling? What is going on? What are you thinking about right now? That there should be more 2-year-olds out here?
No, I'm thinking about a lot of things, believe me. I can't say a few of them.
Oh, God.
But let's, you mentioned the Ocala sale. Let's get a little little blurb about them. So they had the March sale. Now this is the big one. There's over 1,200 horses cataloged. The Breeze Show starts on April 15th. I think there's 6 days of that. So 6 days of Breeze. Take a few days off. Take a few deep breaths. And then the sale's April 23rd through April 26th. So a lot of horse flesh is going to be changing hands there.
There's going to be a lot of people there. Right? We actually do a pinhooking operation. We call it Solana Beach Sales. And I think we have 8 horses in the sale. So, and Tom McCrocklin does all that. And then it's a great sale because you're walking. But everybody who's in the business is there. I mean, everybody's there looking to buy the next champion. But you can get, hopefully there'll be a middle market. You know, there's always, you know, a very high-end market. There's always that, you know, low-end market. And the middle market is kind of where we're in.
We've been trying to get it to thicken up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
There's been a couple of signs there's a couple of signs. I mean, you can't use that Gulfstream sale. I mean, that's a boutique sale,
right.
But this is the bellwether. It'll be interesting to see this rebirth of the Keeneland sale today, with 42-year-olds in there, and then there's a variety of other ages, some HORA types.
For those of you who didn't make the March sale, a lot of improvements. Tom Ventura and his crew down there turned into a first-class facility.
It's really nice. Well, I saw you there.
Right, right.
Todd Wojciechowski,
Todd,
good guy.
They do a great job down there, and they really put the horse first. But the pavilion they've done work on,
beautiful,
expanded, and they do their breezes on the Tapita track. And, talking to Tom Ventura about that, they weren't really sure about doing that, but it makes it fair. Regardless of the weather, if it rains a little bit, the whole thing.
Yeah.
If you go out on a Monday, you're going to get the same track basically as on a Thursday. So the times are comparative when you're looking at that.
Absolutely.
And so anyway, Ocala. I'm like an Ocala salesman here.
Absolutely.
I spent five, six days there last month, and I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it really, really was. We had great. And I tell you, if anybody wants an agent and somebody to look for some horses for them at OBS, GaryYoungThoroughbreds.com. Gary will be there, and he'll be through the Breeze Show. And
ask Gary Young about Secret Spice.
All right.
A lot of clockers were smiling after that race. We know that.
They really were.
We got to take the break here and break up things.
So thank you for having me.
No, not at all.
Appreciate it.
LittleRedFeather.com and Gary and Billy together always have options for you, including the business side, including getting in on the
pinhooking's amazing.
You've had a lot of fun. I remember when we sold
Instilled Regard.
When we talked about it right at the beginning, right when you were first getting, you thought, "Let's try this. It'll be fun." Because that's you. You'll try anything.
It's fun, man. It's really different. It's when your horse goes into the ring. I know you got a break, but when your horse goes into the ring to sell, it is just like a race.
Yeah,
I mean, it is the same kind of energy and adrenaline's pumping, and you're just hoping that they sell. And Tommy does a great job. He's the best.
Billy Koch, everybody, and you can follow Billy too. He's LRF
at BKLRF.
BKLRF.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's it.
Those are always tough. John Velasquez has got that LJL.
I'm not a Twitter guy.
Just use your name, folks.
I'm gonna change it. Thank you, buddy.
Back after this. Good to see you always. John Sadler in a little bit. Steve Miotti's supposed to drop by. John White will be here. And much, much more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more, all for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.